Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew.
This episode is our final episode of 2015.
Yeah, that's interesting, James. It is our final episode of 2015. I believe this is our seventh show so far. So we're going pretty strong. Things are going great. We've had from the beginning, what is our 10th episode has been our big milestone that we're shooting for.
Yep.
Why is that, James?
Well, we're sort of using 10 as sort of the, I guess,
the milestone
To say, okay, this is going well. We're going to look back at how we've done over the last 10 episodes in terms of statistics and everything as far as our listenership or the things that we've done, and then move forward with a more, I guess, refined show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from the beginning, we kind of agreed once we hit 10, we'll take a step back and we'll kind of see where we are, how the format's been, get some feedback from the audience, and start looking for some sponsors.
Yeah,
well, I think some fun times.
One of the other things we've talked about too is maybe making the site a little bit more Vancouver centric in terms of branding and stuff like that. Right now, the theme that's set up on our sort of the theme of our show is a bit like drab. Essentially, it's all gray and white. I think I want to refresh that. Maybe make it a little bit more Vancouver.
The actual styles
special.
Of our
like the physical look of the brand of this of the show.
For sure, it might be a good idea to kind of revisit what we had there. The tools that we've had so far have gotten us to show 7,
at least
pretty well, and there's been some good response. I'm pretty excited. How are you feeling, James?
I'm really happy. Obviously, when we first started, we were sort of unsure about what was going to happen, and you know, we've heard the horror stories of people making it not like it being really difficult to run a show every single week. And so we've run 7 weeks in a row, we've been able to put a show out, which is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, and it's gone pretty smoothly, I think, although it might be a little different for you. You seem to do all the work.
Yeah, I mean, you Drew books most, I guess, all of the guests so far, so I do my due diligence in editing the show and putting up the notes and collecting all that sort of stuff. So that's my question.
Which definitely helps, as well as doing the mixing and things like that. So anyway, things have been going great. I've been having a lot of fun. We're here at show 7. We're going to take a couple of weeks break we got Christmas coming up and New Year's. Are you going anywhere for New Year's or Christmas, James?
Yeah, I'm going home to Ontario.
Ontario. Yeah. Wow. What's that?
That's where the family lives. Actually, my mom's from Australia, so I have family coming from Australia to visit, and I haven't seen them in like 7 years, so that's going to be fun.
Is it true that they say budgerigars in Australia instead of budgies?
I don't know.
Ask your mom.
I know they say prawn. People say, throw the shrimp on the Barbie, but they actually say prawn. So update your tropes, people.
Nice. Sounds awesome. Okay, well, hopefully you have a fun time. For me, I'm just going to be sticking around locally. My mom and my sister are both in and around the greater Vancouver area.
Yep.
So we'll get together, have a good time, maybe go ice skating at Robson Square.
Right.
That'll maybe be the highlight of the season.
Well, how about we dive into some events?
Absolutely.
Meetups around town.
All right, so we've had a pretty interesting past week. I thought it was really going to start dying down, and it did a little bit, but there have been a lot of meetups. There's a lot going on in the Vancouver tech scene.
Yeah, I did better this week than I did last week, where I only made it to one.
Oh,
so I made
awesome.
It to two things.
Good
this
for
week.
You. Two things. Great. That's one more than last week and two more than I made it to this week.
Oh, no. Okay, so, but I'll start with the first one. We talked about this one last time about, we were both confused about, what is a product manager? And we were both saying, I don't know. So I went to the Intro to Product Management workshop. This was at Brain Station.
Oh, right. How was it?
It was really good, actually. And there was one good takeaway that I didn't really realize that actually summed up exactly what a product manager is. And that was, if it's broken, the engineering manager gets fired. If it's late, the project manager gets fired. If nobody wants to buy it, the product manager gets fired.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. So the product manager, from what you've just said, is more or less responsible for knowing what the consumer wants and making sure that that's the product that gets delivered.
That's exactly what they do. So like I said, sort of if the product is something that nobody wants, well, then that job wasn't done properly, right?
Very interesting. Okay, so that was given by Loki from Mobify. How was it? Was it a good talk from Loki? How was the venue at Brain Station? Who showed up?
Yeah, he did a really good job. It was actually a lot of upcoming students. So I was sitting beside a girl. She was saying, I'm taking this course in January. So she was there sort of checking it out. She was taking the product management course, which is he's actually teaching. You got a little insight into how his teaching style and how he teaches. And he did a really good job. There was, you know, a little bit of drinks, a little bit of socializing after.
That's
really
kind of interesting. So something I've noticed about having meetups at some of these coding schools or coding boot camps is they tend to have a fairly high attendance from the actual students, good or bad, I'm not sure. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I saw, I mean, I didn't see anyone that I recognized from the sort of events or meetup circuit that we've been hitting on, like, the last few months. I did see one guy that I know he's not a student, so, I mean, there was a bit of crossover, at least from the people that I knew. I saw, oh, that, I recognize that guy from Hackernest, I recognize that guy from, you know, Wishpond, but I think the majority of people were either students that were coming up for January, or they were actually scoping out the place to see what was, you know, up and coming and sort of brain station.
Oh, that makes sense. I think the last meetup I went to that was at, oh, that's not true. I was going to say the last meetup I went to that was at a coding boot camp was the Ruby Lightning Talks, but I've gone to a couple since then. I think the public cloud user group as well.
Yeah.
But at the Ruby Lightning Talks, as an example, even though the boot camp was focused on Ruby, I noticed a couple, you know, but there was quite a big turnout, and it was mostly from developers in the Ruby community. So it's generally a pretty good mix, I think.
The other one I went to was the Code and Coffee holiday event.
Nice. And how was that?
That one was really fun. It was really packed, too. There was a lot of people, talked to a bunch of people. There wasn't, this event wasn't like a typical Code and Coffee. So if you went and you were like, this is strange, well, it's not normally like that. It's normally presentations and socializing with a 50-50 split between the time of the event.
And what made it strange this time, James?
Well, it was a lot of Christmas cheer, right? So it's like their ending party. They had, you know, people were festive. Everyone was like sort of dressed up. They had four boxes of wine this time instead of one. So they had hot chocolate and coffee and all little treats and stuff. They had what are those called? Rice Krispie squares or marshmallow squares if you're being trademark safe. So they had those, and that was really fun. Talked to a bunch of people. So yeah, it was really great.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So what kind of people show up to Code and Coffee?
It was a good mix, actually. There was a bunch of people there, just mostly it's developers usually, because there's presentations that are development specific. There was a couple of designers that I met, met a couple of freelancers. I've talked to a guy a couple of times now who actually used to work at Plenty of Fish, and he's always got a cool story to tell about, you know, what he used to work in Seattle and all this stuff. So it's always cool to talk to these type of people that have sort of really gone around the circuit as far as, you know, technology goes. So it was always an interesting group of people.
That's actually something I really like about these meetups. It reminds me a lot of when we're back in school, you know, and there'd be those friends you'd talk to at school or you'd bump into on the street, and you'd always have that 10 or 15 minute conversation and kind of catch up.
Yeah.
But you might not know each other's phone numbers and you might not hang out intentionally. But when you bump into each other, it's always a pleasure. And I think that at a lot of these meetups, it really has that kind of community vibe, you know, that there are those people that you're in the same community, you run into sometimes, even though you might not have any of the same overlapping classes, i.e. you're not working in the same company at the moment, but you might sometime in the future.
Yeah, exactly. It's always great to have these contacts. Like one event I went to, I was giving someone my business card, and he actually said, like, and I appreciate the candor, he said, I'm not going to call you, like, you know, don't give me your card, essentially. But I said, the card isn't for me, or my card isn't for you, it's for who you give it to. So if I give someone a card, it's not because I'm expecting them to call me. I'm expecting them to look at all the cards on their table and say, oh, I know someone who does, you know, marketing. I know someone who does development or design, or I know some company that does financial, you know, technology like Mogo. It's not for the person you're giving it to. It's for who they pass it on to. Which
that's
is really important thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I used to hate cards, but now I give them out all the time like candy.
I tend to try not to have a card, but sometimes companies want to give them to you. But I try and have easy enough to find contact info. That's why.
That's true. You can always
drewbro.com. Pretty easy to find, right?
Cool.
It's got all that contact
I didn't know that
info
exists.
Right,
is that up? That's up. We can check
it is.
Out.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's something I put together. Wow, I guess almost 2 years ago now, and kind of never went back to.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I had some fun with it. I wanted to build out a responsive site, not using any frameworks.
Yeah.
So there's like four different JavaScript, just pure JavaScript functions.
Nice.
That give us some responsiveness. And I had some fun with, there was this tool called Bird Font, which was...
Bird Font.
Yeah, it was alpha or beta, I can't remember, some open source software that lets you design your own fonts. It was
a little
bit buggy, being honest there. It was a little bit buggy, but it was fun to work through those bugs. And I came up with the DrewBro font.
Nice.
So I have a scalable vector graphic font.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah,
I'll have to check that out. What's it called? Bird?
DrewBro.com. Oh.
And the font? DrewBro.com. And then the Bird font is...
Bird font was the name of the software.
Okay.
I believe it's Mac only, so sorry if you're on anything else. But,
yeah, cool.
But it was a pretty interesting tool to use, at least.
I think the final common thread in the events was people venting about how brutal the end of the year was, like getting things done, getting things out the door, queuing things up for January 2016 when everyone gets back to work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
It's interesting.
That,
it's like an artificial construct that we put on our whole society. It's the end of the year. I don't know what we're doing.
Well, but I think there's real constructs like budget. Some people's budget doesn't roll over,
right?
So they got to just spend it to make it, which is like the weirdest rule ever. But anyway, Let's jump into the upcoming events.
All right, cool. So upcoming, we actually have quite a bit coming up, but we're not going to be around for the next couple of weeks. So rather than just do next week, we thought we'd add a few more events to that as well. And there's some pretty cool things coming up. So one of the first things that's coming up is Open Coffee, something you made it out to last time, James. I'm going to make a real strong effort to make it out this time. It's 8 a.m. It's on a Tuesday morning. It's probably going to be raining, maybe some sleet.
Maybe.
And it's all the way across town, like 5 blocks from my house.
Yeah, 8 a.m. at Nelson the Seagull, Open Coffee. It's every Tuesday. It's actually coming up again the next week following. So, I mean, it's on our list twice. So, you know, January 5th as well, you can go to the same event.
Nice. And that should be pretty awesome. And those are obviously on Tuesdays, 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. I'm guessing you can leave early if you have to be at work by 9. And some coffee. James, you went out there and you were surprisingly delighted by the great turnout of people in the conversation.
The conversation was great. The turnout was about 6 people, but that was actually nice because I literally talked to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't miss anyone. I got introduced to everyone that was there. So, you know, the small thing, some people may be like, oh, there's nobody here, but it's like, that's good if you want to meet everyone that's there, right?
Yeah. And how many people do you really want to talk to at 8 a.m. before you've had your first coffee?
Exactly.
Okay. So another one coming up, also coffee related, one I just stumbled upon.
Yeah.
It was called Math and Coffee.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much of an overlap this has with the tech community, but I figure math, you know, it's something we deal with pretty much every day, all the time with development. And so that's at Blends Coffee, on Helmkin Street in Yale Town.
Yeah.
And it's something we'll check out. It's coming up on Wednesday, December 23rd, 5:30 to 7:30. Something that is said on the meetup that I thought was kind of interesting. Maybe a little bit of a job title segregation thing. I'm not sure. But one of the things it said was just, you know, bring your physicist friends, bring your engineering friends.
Yeah.
But it didn't say bring your comp sci friends.
Ooh. Yeah, so that, I guess, scientific programming is going to be is not something that's allowed to be talked about.
I'm sure it will be. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of interesting conversation there. I'm going to try and make it out to that. That's coming up on Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. At Blends Coffee, 338 Helmkin Street.
I think that's the one that's really, really close to Brain Station.
Right beside it on the corner there.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
It's literally 2 blocks from my house.
Yeah.
All right, so another one that's coming up, also one I hadn't seen this group before. I'm not sure how long they've been around, but I'd like to check this out. Unfortunately, it overlaps with Math and Coffee from the Vancouver Plural Sight Study Group, and they're having a pretty interesting meetup that I forgot to take the details of. It looks like it's an interesting event. It's going to be at the PNI Digital Media Offices, which is Suite 100, 425 Corral Street, first floor, Wednesday the 23rd at 5:30 p.m. And what's that all about, James?
Well, the actual title of the event is Building and Securing a RESTful API for Multiple Clients in ASP.NET. We haven't really talked that much about ASP.NET events. I'm not really sure. Maybe we're just sort of, you know,
I think
out of
that's,
it.
That's one of the reasons I brought it up. I thought the whole RESTful API part was pretty interesting. Apps.net or ASP.net, however you say it, never really used it, but it might be fun to take a look at. And I'm quite sure that if you're developing in something else, you know, just the idea of building and securing a RESTful API is going to appeal to a lot of people. And taking a look at ASP.NET might be fun. It might not. We'll get to see the types of people who are using it.
The Plural Sight group, though, that's like a study group, right? Like they're studying a course or a book?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. So I'll have to go to that and check it out. So I'm kind of torn between the two, Math and Coffee or Plural Sight. I might just go out and check out the Plural Sight, but they both seem kind of interesting. So another one that's coming up, this is something I can't think of the person's name at the moment, but James, remember when you'd gotten me to go out to that startup drinks?
Oh, right.
I met one of the people running the Lean Agile meetup. And that's coming up Thursday, December 24th, literally Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to have a huge attendance. I don't know what the attendance is going to be like. It's at Plenty of Fish at their office. Yeah, that's 555 West Hastings.
You ever been to the Plenty of Fish office?
I have a couple of times. Yeah.
How is it? I've never been.
It's really cool. I like the way that when you come in, there's a bit of a front desk to greet you, and you kind of go behind there. And there's, I guess, a mini amphitheater sort of look. It's right on the corner, so you have some pretty good views. It's pretty high up there as well. It's, I think, the 25th floor. There's a little bit of a stage. It's kind of perfect for meetups of up to maybe 30, 40 people, something like that. Cool. They also have around the corner, they have a nice little beer fridge there. Every time I've been there, it's been something cloud related. So I think we had the OpenStack meetup a couple of times there and something else that I can't think of. And it's been great.
And after that, we have one of the old faithfuls, Startup Drinks. Thursday, December 31st.
So this is interesting as well. This is New Year's Eve. So we've got meetups coming up on the 24th. We've got a meetup coming up on the 31st. So I've got something interesting here at PNI Digital Media Offices. I have two things written down here. James, maybe you can help me out here. The Pluralsight Study Group, and I've got Building and Securing RESTful APIs on different dates. One on the 23rd, one on the 30th. What is up with that?
I think it's a continuation of the same whatever they're studying.
Oh, okay. So the RESTful API might be spread over two nights.
Yeah. There's no description, so I would say more, but there's no description at the moment.
So Christmas Eve Eve and New Year's Eve Eve. I might be able to make it out to those. New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve, I'm probably not going to make it out to the Lean Agile meetup or to Startup Drinks this time. Although, hey, who better to spend an usher in the new year with than Startup Drinks Vancouver? And coming up next year, I believe it is, we've got some interesting things. Again, we've got BrainStation events. That's on the 4th, I think, January 4th. We've got an intro to digital marketing workshop. That should be fun, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. James, you've been to some events at BrainStation other than HackerNest, which I have not.
Yeah.
What's the overall layout like? What's the reception like? How's the vibe?
So BrainStation's a pretty sweet place. Lots of concrete, lots of glass, lots of white walls. It's a pretty sweet place. It's definitely a very, you know, when you picture, you know, a modern code school, that it's actually like a postcard. It looks so much nice. Like it. It's really cool.
Okay, architecture and design aside, what about the people there, the general feel of the place?
I've talked to a few of the people that are students there, and they all sound really happy. I think that the difference between BrainStation some of the other schools that BrainStation focuses a little bit more on there's less coding options, I think, or sorry, there's more options that have less to do with coding. So like product design, marketing, actual design, like graphic design, the product management one, which is one I mentioned. So these courses attract different people, right? So it's not, doesn't seem as code heavy. So you kind of get that different group of people that are more on the design side of things versus something like, I guess Code Core has code. It's a lot of code. There's no design courses, I think.
Nothing design focused or design specific.
So I think that's where they're picking up that sort of side of things.
Interesting. So a lot of the peripherals in and around the tech startup scene. Cool. Sounds awesome.
So this event is actually, the host is Andrea Bywater, and she's the marketing specialist at BuildDirect Technologies.
Oh, cool. Also in the same building as us at Mogo. And then we've got January 5th, which looks like a pretty interesting day for events.
Yep.
We've got Open Coffee and we've got the Polyglot Social. So Open Coffee is happening again, 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Hopefully one of us will see you there. I think you're going to be gone until
gone until the 4th.
Oh, okay. And so probably going to be dead tired, 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Then the Polyglot Social coming up that evening. That should be pretty fun. That's at the St. Regis again. And that's the social, not the hack night. So if you want to go out, have some beers, have some nachos, have some juice, whatever, and just talk to people in the community, that might be a good one to go to.
It starts at 6, and the description says it sort of peters out by 10.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're into a long event, that's a good
one. I've gone there pretty late, and there were some hammered people having fun. Cool. And we sat down and talked CQRS, I believe.
Nice.
So some fun stuff. All right, and then we've got another one that I'm not sure if it really ties in with what we do here and what our focus is, but I thought I'd bring it up because it seems really interesting, and I know a lot of us are really interested in these hackspaces. So at the Vancouver Hackspace, there's kind of an open presentation, anything goes thing. So if you can think of something, if you've been hacking away with that Arduino and you've got something cool happening, this might be the venue for it if you just want to give a talk. 7:30 to 9:30. This is at 104 1715 Cook Street, January the 7th, and that's in Olympic Village. They say it's about a 3-minute walk from the Olympic Village SkyTrain station or 10 minutes from Main Street. So that might be interesting to check out, Vancouver Hackspace.
Yeah, the title is actually Random 30-Minute Presentation Night.
Yeah.
So if you want to get in on that, definitely check it out.
Should be pretty cool. All right, anyway, that pretty much wraps it up for our meetups, upcoming meetups over the next couple of weeks. It is the holiday season, so hopefully you stay warm, have fun, spend some time with your loved ones, and get to all those projects you've been pushing to the end of the year. Make sure you get them done. Yeah, and make sure, as always, to check us out, VancouverTechPodcast.ca. Come and talk to us on the YVR Dev Slack channel. If you need an invite, yvrdev.herokuapp.com. We do have one t-shirt left as a giveaway, and that's a Done.js t-shirt. So if you want to hit up either me or James, so that's at Drew or at James on YVR Dev Slack, go ahead and do so, and that t-shirt could be yours.
If you see us in person before it's gone, too, you can claim it that way as well.
Good luck, because we're in disguises.
Yeah, you definitely have to find us.
Okay, well, have yourselves a great year. That's it for Vancouver Tech Podcast for 2015. All right, and we're here with Tam Cavelli of CodeCore. This is part of our ongoing series with the changing face of education in tech, where we look at some of the different boot camps around town and some of their students, and then follow up with them again in a year. We had a couple of students, Alex and Jade, from CodeCore a couple weeks ago, so you can check that out in one of our previous episodes. And today we have Tam, who is the founder of and also lead instructor at CodeCore. Thanks for being here, Tam.
Thank you for having me, guys. This is awesome. You're doing an awesome job with this podcast.
Thank you very much. Woohoo. My first compliment.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tam, why don't you tell us, first of all, a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Tam. Thanks for presenting me. I studied computer engineering in Halifax, in Dalhousie University.
Oh.
I actually came from Syria originally. I came here as an international student to Canada. Mm-hmm. And then I worked in a company called PMC Sierra for a few months upon graduation. Then I worked at TELUS, a telecom company, for a few years. Then I worked for another company called PMC Sierra before doing my own consulting and starting CodeCore. Now I'm the lead instructor at CodeCore. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of the teaching and a lot of curriculum development and, yeah.
That sounds pretty awesome. Let's go back a little bit. So what was the, you said you studied computer science at Dalhousie?
Computer engineering, actually.
Computer engineering. Yeah. What was the motivation behind that?
Well, I had an amazing mentor since early high school who got me into computers and programming. Mm-hmm. So I was like coding HTML in Syria at times where people barely knew what computers were. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky to know that mentor, and he really got me into computers and programming.
Right.
So after graduating from high school, I really wanted to just go into studying computer science, computer engineering, and so on. That's what got me into it. It's something I've always been fascinated by since high school.
Very cool. And why Dalhousie?
Well, there's many reasons. What happened is that I went to Halifax first to study English, actually, to improve my English to a point where I could get into the university. Mm-hmm. I had to do the TOEFL test.
Right.
You may know what that is.
I'm pretty familiar with that. I spent some time as a TOEFL teacher, actually.
Awesome, yeah. So I had to take the test, so my English wasn't enough to take that test. So I studied, and Dalhousie happened to be there, so I was accepted there. After this, I started there. It was a decent university. Some of the courses were a little outdated and stuff, but as a university, relatively speaking, it was decent, so I just continued to study there.
Okay, pretty awesome. So when you finished that, you decided to come to Vancouver, or...?
Yeah, it was interesting. It happened by coincidence, actually, because what happened at that time, as an international student, I had only 90 days to find a job.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Otherwise, I had to leave the country. Right. So I had to take basically the first job that I got. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be in Vancouver in a company called PMC Sierra, which is in Burnaby.
Wow.
And I just basically, but after coming to Vancouver, I didn't want to live here.
Yeah,
BMC Sierra. Was it called BMC Sierra at the time?
Yeah, still. It was called PMC Sierra. PMC Sierra. And it still exists. It's actually since the 90s.
It's a pretty big company, right?
They kind of shrank over the last little while. They manufacture chips, basically, for routers and other kind of specialized chips.
What did you do there? What were you doing at PMC Sierra? Your first job. It sounds like you were there for a while. What was your first job there?
My first, actually, I only spent 7 months there.
Oh, okay.
And my job was writing Tickle scripts.
Tickle, wow.
Tickle, yeah. Remember, you used Tickle, Drew, right?
A little bit, yeah. I actually, my first job in tech was working with some of the creators of Tickle, actually, and maintainers.
Fantastic.
It's like a terminal thing, right? Something for tech.
Tool command language. Yeah. So, yeah, it's language. Actually. Yeah. It's surprising how many people have used it and how prevalent it is. If you look at things like, I believe, Redis, for example, their command line is all written in Tickle.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, a lot of the lower level stuff. So, yeah. So Tickle, what were you doing with Tickle?
I was writing script to test chips. So they would build this chip. I would write a script to test different scenarios for making sure when you do a broadcast or multicast or all that stuff and make sure that, you know, you give it an input, you take an output. It was as simple as this. So, I've just basically spent most of my days writing Tickle scripts.
Are there any devices out there now that are running because of your tests?
Possibly.
Where did
the
your
chip
hardware
I was
go?
Working on was called Athena chip, Athena 2 or something.
Yeah.
And I think it was in some router. So,
oh, okay.
But I don't know specifically what router. This has been since 2007. So
yeah.
I wouldn't remember the exact details, but probably some routers or some, like, usually they were focusing on communication devices like, TV broadcasting, routers.
Oh, that's really cool.
So some of them may be running on those ones.
Wow. So that's going back a little bit. And you were using, I guess, mostly command line scripting, writing tests and things like that. What did you move on to from there?
From then, I mean, I've always done, even when I was in university, I've done a little bit of a PHP, HTML, CSS. Because since high school, I mean, I've always loved doing stuff for the web.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It just happened for different reasons that I went into the computer engineering side of things, which was a little bit more heavy on the hardware rather than the software.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the reasons I went to PMC as my first job. But I always wanted to find something in web development. So I got into TELUS, and they had an incredible program then called the BT Leadership Development Program, BTLDP, where it was kind of like a startup within TELUS, where you go, you can build small web applications for TELUS employees. So it was just used internally.
Oh,
but we had a lot of freedom. We had a lot of, like, training opportunities. We had a lot of, flexibility with things. And honestly, it was an incredible program. Unfortunately for TELUS, everybody who went through the program ended up leaving TELUS. Once you get to, like, other departments, sometimes you're a little disappointed with the differences in the work life and the work style. So
that tends to happen with a lot of larger organizations, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it was such a great experience. And we use Java for the most part, but we built internal web applications to improve efficiency of internal TELUS teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I did some project management as well at TELUS. So after the program, I also ended up leaving somewhere else.
Maybe everyone just followed you. You know, you're such a great leader.
Awesome.
So you eventually got into training. I believe, if I understand correctly, you started out with kind of corporate training, going into companies and doing some training with them.
Yeah. So, I mean, even when I was at TELUS in the LDP program, I did some internal training. So I would learn a new technology like JSF, I remember, ice faces. I don't know if they still exist right now, but I would, like, pick up new technology. I would just do a little session in TELUS for, you know, internal employees to teach them that stuff. So, and then after leaving TELUS, I worked at a company called Partnerpedia. But then I started doing just with the Ruby meetup, actually. I've done, like, some one-day sessions to teach Rails before actually starting my own company, which was doing consulting and training at the same time.
So you'd already had some experience with that. And what made you decide to go ahead and jump into the world of boot camps?
To start with, I mean, I came from a family that really values education. My mother is a teacher, and my family really put up most of their savings to just send me to Canada to study. I mean, they value education that much. But honestly, I was a little disappointed after finishing because I've only really used, like, maybe 20% of what I learned in the university.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, there's a lot of, like, you develop, like, learning skills and problem-solving skills. So it wasn't, like, completely a waste, but I always thought there could be a better way than having to go through, like, a four-year structured in a certain way kind of program to learn programming, to learn anything for that matters. And then I heard about boot camps down in the United States, and I was, you know, fascinated by the idea because I was like, yeah, this could actually work. I think it's totally feasible to teach certain people programming within within a few months, 2 to 3 months. Because coding at the end of the day, it's really just problem solving. And mm-hmm. then we teach you the tools that you can problem solve in a different context. Mm-hmm. As I heard about them, I decided I would like to have one in Vancouver. Vancouver was long due for one at the time. So after leaving Partnerpedia, the last job I had, I did some consulting. So I was doing web development consulting.
Right.
And in the afternoons, I would do training. So that was kind of to build up to the boot camp. And then early in January, we started, January 2014, we started mm-hmm. our first boot camp. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Which I remember pretty well.
Which you remember pretty well. You were one of the most amazing students then. Oh, exactly. You've gone a long way.
Yeah, that was a really great experience for me. I want to come back to that a little later. I couldn't help but noticing, you said teach certain people. I wanted you to clarify what you meant by certain people.
We have an admissions test for getting into the boot camp.
Right.
And that requires knowing a little bit of programming. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't know programming, we advise them to take our fundamentals course, which is our part-time course that is designed for people with no programming mm-hmm. knowledge or experience. Or we give them some online material that they can prepare by themselves.
Right.
And some people just get it. I'd say a majority of people probably, but especially, there are some people who just love the problem-solving aspect of it. They mm-hmm. think of programming as, problem-solving and puzzles, putting Lego pieces together or solving a jigsaw puzzle or whatever. Mm-hmm. While others don't enjoy this process, they find it frustrating. They find it, that's not for them, right? Mm-hmm. So this is why I said certain people. Certain people, to me, the key ingredient is that people have to love coding in order to excel in coding. Mm-hmm. And, it isn't something that you just, can go and learn and just become a great coder. You have to really love it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's ingredient number one. Having a university degree is really secondary. We found great examples of cooks and, I think Yudru was even doing something car sales or something completely different right. to become incredibly good developers, right? Mm-hmm. And someday they'll probably be better than me and many others who have went through a four-year degree. I'm actually sure it will happen at some mm-hmm, point with, mm-hmm. with enough experience. This is why I said certain people, because some people I find they have the aptitude and maybe from life experience or what they studied in the past that makes them ready to take boot camp.
So that was going to be my next question. Do you think this is some sort of personality trait or, some people can code and some people can't? Or do you think this is something that's learnable?
That's a good question. Everybody can learn to code. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe. It's just much harder for others, for some people than others. It's to me the same as math. Think about it in math. Some students mm-hmm. just get math and they find it so easy, while others learn math, but it's an upstream battle for them it's swimming upstream for them to learn it.
Right.
So I think everybody can learn coding to an extent. And this is why I think it's great if it's introduced in school, some mm-hmm. similar way to how math is in school. Mm-hmm. But some people, I believe, honestly, I'm not sure if it's personality, genetics, or it could be genetics for all I know, or it could be upbringing, environment, that makes some people just, excel better than others at it.
An interesting thing that I've heard, and I tend to believe, although again, I'm not quite sure. It's really hard to pinpoint. Is this a personality trait, or is it something that everyone can do? But I think we've all heard of Sal Khan and Khan Academy. So they've done a great thing with math and kind of automated the process of learning at your own pace. You can go and it's a little bit gamified, but it could be a little bit more gamified. It is still math, but it's quite helpful. And you can go over and review problems as much as you want to get to a point. Now, the key thing there is you have to do it. But something that Sal mentioned was the difference between these students that excel in math and the ones who get left behind is often as little as 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
5 minutes of personal attention. When that student in the second grade or wherever it is, where they didn't pay attention for that 1 second, they looked away and now all of a sudden everybody else is ahead of them. If you go and sit down and spend 5 minutes to catch them up, then they'll be that person at the head of the class. And by having the right style of education to be able to do so, from an early age, because often this sort of being behind in math is something that proliferates over time. And, that one moment where you looked away, it could stay with you and haunt you for the rest of your life. I often tend to think that this is the same thing with coding. And I find that my personal opinion, and maybe you can tell me differently because you've got a much better perspective, I think. But for people with coding, I think that an ideal candidate would be somebody who's tried it, who's struggled with it, who's not giving up and hasn't been beaten by it, but is still struggling with it and just feels like they need that extra mentorship to get over the hump. And I think then they can really benefit from it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great point. And you're probably right. I mean, I've noticed that, the people who excel most in our boot camps are usually, the people who've dabbled with it themselves and like... I think you have a point here that, probably a key thing is not giving up, because it could be like you've given up just before you were about to get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that, it's not like a makeup that you understand it or not understand it, but maybe the key thing is, did you give up just before you did it?
Yeah.
So yeah, I've noticed that, the people who get the most out of the bootcamp are usually people who've tried different online venues, tried reading books, building apps, and they were hitting a wall of some sort. Or they're just being impeded by like problem after problem while, being in an environment where everybody's supportive and show you the best practices and the good ways of doing it will speed up that learning process. And I think probably you can attest to this, Drew. Like, you've done some PHP, I think, before coming to
sure
the bootcamp.
Yes.
And that's probably, was one of the factors that you came out such strong after the bootcamp and excelled in the industry.
Well, in my case, I did a diploma in computing, actually online. So I had a little bit of an understanding of some of the theory. I spent about a year reading through a lot of PHP books and kind of going through the LAMP stack. I did, maybe three or four good textbooks, and I'd done Intro to Databases through the Stanford's OpenCourseWare. But I wasn't at a level where I could go to a technical interview and actually get a job as a developer, at least not in my mind.
You don't think you had the hours of coding that you needed?
I don't think I had the understanding in general.
Oh, okay.
At the time, I'd being completely self-taught, in a way, as far as being isolated. I think one of the things with doing everything online, sure, I'd had a diploma, but I did it online. I didn't have people to talk to about it. I didn't have conversations outside of class. I didn't hack on things on my own. It was all project-based. And so, yeah, I managed to get through it based on reading comprehension and ability to write and kind of going through things like that. But going away from that and just kind of venturing into something I wanted to build for myself or wanted to do, I got lost a lot and it was really frustrating. I remember even the Rails tutorial, which is a great tutorial, Michael Hartle. I remember that, going through there and getting stuck because I think I'd installed my Ruby development environment and then I upgraded to Mavericks or something crazy and everything broke and different versions of Ruby and things like that I really would have benefited from having someone to talk to. And going through the boot camp, I had a pretty solid understanding of HTML. I had a pretty good understanding that there was some back end stuff that happened and some way to communicate with the database. I had an idea that relational data existed and there were these things called foreign keys, but how they tied into each other. I remember trying to do a database-driven design development framework, trying to build my own CRM from the database. So I built out this database, and I did all that, and I was like, okay, now the hard work's done, now all I need to do is build the front end. What? It was really crazy. It didn't make any sense. And going through the boot camp, it was like things just clicked. Finally I understood what this MVC pattern was and how it worked and what the responsibilities of each of these things were. But even going through it, I mean, there was tons and tons of stuff that I didn't realize at the time. It's 2 months of pretty much everything, full stack, what you're going to be doing over the next couple of years, what you're going to be learning and having sink in over the next couple of years. It's a very accelerated learning rate. And going into industry and working with people who've been in it for 20 plus years, some very, very, what I would consider expert people, I was quite surprised at how much I'd learned and how much I was able to contribute. For example, with Git workflows, where I actually had more experience than some people that were professional developers, having come through the bootcamp. And I thought that was great. So I was immediately able to jump in. I think the biggest thing that I learned, and I think you hit it on the head, there, when you talked about your university degree, was that you didn't use every single thing that you learned, but what you really learned was problem solving. What I learned, I think, the most out of the boot camp was how to approach a problem and that I can solve it, and also to not give up. So I find that the most frustrated I ever get, when I get to that point where I'm the most frustrated, that's just before I see the solution.
Well, you stop after the solution's found.
Right. So if you never give up, then you can succeed.
Yeah. Right. As someone who didn't go to a boot camp, mm-hmm. I think one of the big things that I see is like projects, and I know this about Code Core, but even the other boot camps, that the projects that you get to use are things that are a lot more practical. Like when I was in school, it was like build a portfolio page for yourself. It's like that's a pretty low hanging fruit, and these code boot camps are more like how do we? I know one for Code Core this year was something about an event system, right? That's like a real application. You need to know from the start to the end how to make that. You need to know all the steps that go in between that. So I think that that's one of the big things that I see as someone from the outside who was like, I wish I had a project in school that covered the full range of requirements as a developer, which I really didn't have. It was like piecemeal here and there. And hey, guess what? When you're done, somebody else will show you how to put it all together, mm-hmm. which it sounds like these boot camps actually do that. We'll show you how to do it and how to put it together.
We had at the time when I went through, we had some engineers who had some professional experience. One, his company had actually sent him through because they were doing, it was a pretty large company, and they were doing an internal project where they were treating it like a startup. They got about four or five people together and they were doing just a whole new thing, primarily using Rails. And they sent this one Java developer in to learn Rails and then become the maintainer of this product. So they had they'd hired out, I think, a third-party contractor who was quite a senior, well-known Rails developer to help build out the project. But then he'd come in and take over this role. And I think he's done a brilliant job since then, and he's still there and doing quite well.
Yeah, I met him actually in the demo day 2 days ago, mm-hmm. and he's now kind of the main Ruby on Rails developer in that company. Mm-hmm. And he was coming back to hire more of Code Core students because they had such a good experience with him.
So that's something I'm actually surprised we don't see more of that. We don't see more corporate training. Getting out and going into industry, if I were to pay somebody, you know, to a senior developer to sit beside me and teach me for 2 months, that would be a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of surprised that we don't see more companies send people to these boot camps. Anyway, coming back to you, what have you seen? What sort of turnaround have you seen? Have you seen a lot of people failing the boot camps? Have you seen a lot of people going through it and succeeding? What's your general impression?
Yeah, I mean, overall, it's been fantastic. I mean, we have a close to 100% placement rate. The majority of our students end up finding a job shortly after the boot camp. Some of them take longer than others, depending on different factors, but eventually all of them get into the industry. In terms of failure rate, I mean, we don't see as much because usually we do the admissions test.
Yeah.
And we make everybody aware of how intensive and how, you know, hard it is to go through the boot camp. And we got better at like painting a better picture for what the boot camp is like. And like from the test, our test got better also over time. That at some, you know, we get to a level where like we know almost, I mean, there will be error, of course, but we know ahead of time whether somebody will succeed, will get the best out of the boot camp or not by doing the, you know, we do an interview right now in addition to doing like the technical test for them to get into the boot camp. So it's been fantastic. I mean, and, you know, we have lots of companies that keep coming back to hire more students, which is a huge indication of success. It's good that companies are becoming more accepting also for taking people from boot camps, which is fantastic. Because I mean, one thing in Vancouver, we really have a huge talent shortage in here for tech. Tech is the industry that's growing probably the fastest here in BC, and we're suffering from tech shortage. So the fact that companies are open to take people, graduates from boot camps, I think it's a wonderful thing.
I can remember, I guess about a decade or so ago, when Wikipedia first came out, You know, university professors would yell at you if you tried to cite it in one of your papers and say that's not a legitimate source. Now, I think we'd be hard pressed to find a more legitimate source than something like Wikipedia. Would you say this is somewhat of a parallel with boot camps and education?
Kind of, for sure. So many companies, especially when we first started, they were a little bit picky about we only want people with computer science or engineering degrees. Mm-hmm. And we do have computer science and engineering graduates who come through our bootcamp, but they're usually the minority. The majority of our students are actually not from a computer science and engineering background. But we found those same companies, I guess by hearing about success stories from other companies or by them trying so hard to hire people mm-hmm. who are like computer science or engineering graduates or senior developers, and they give it a shot. They're willing to try to take maybe a little bit more risk if that's the right expression on like one of those, one of our graduates. Mm-hmm. And I think the majority of them had a positive experience. So I think, over time, I think we'll get to a point where for certain aspects, like for web development, mobile development, I think these are fields where boot camps can really fill in a good gap in there. Mm-hmm.
That's actually a nice segue for what is the future of CodeCore moving forward into 2016?
So in 2016, we're launching a part-time iOS course. In March, we're also expanding our program to become a 12-week program.
Oh, okay.
So as you know, as we've learned over the last 2 years, there's a ton more we can teach, of course. Our job was more to be like the 80-20 principle kind of teaching, where we take the 20% of things that are taught that you need 80% of the times, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, universities where they try to give you a little bit of everything, you end up having to learn what you need on the job.
The shotgun versus the sniper.
Exactly. Yeah. Excellent way to put it. Yeah. Thanks, James. we've learned that there's a few more things that we would like to teach in our bootcamp. Like, for example, algorithms, more on SQL. Mm. There's a lot more on JavaScript that we'd like to teach. Digging deeper into, you know, JavaScript or more frameworks with JavaScript, architecture with JavaScript. So when we put it all together, we realized, it's a great idea to. So we switch our program to become 12 weeks. And we have the side effect also of, because we're an accredited school now, it's eligible for student loans. Mm-hmm. So it puts us in a category where people can take government student loans to come to a boot camp. So it's getting to a point where it's more than just like, you know, a small school. We're actually like at the same level of Vancouver Film School and other ones.
I think even calling it a boot camp at this point, now with like the government sanctioned, you know, loans and all that stuff, it is now a school. It is a school.
It is
in all, you know, in all definition. You can get a loan to it. You get a real, actual, I guess there's still probably the question about diploma and degree and all that thing. Maybe that'll come around at some point.
But you're still going to have to allot about 80 hours a week.
Totally. Yeah.
Make no mistake. You got to put a lot of work in.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, actually, we call ourselves CodeCore right now. We used to call ourselves CodeCore Bootcamp, but now we just call ourselves CodeCore. Because we are intending to eventually become just a technology school and mm-hmm. not just a bootcamp. I mean, a bootcamp is a great start. It's probably going to be around for many years, but eventually we may find different models at work. We may find like a mix of part-time versus practicum versus, you know, teaching online, offline. So we're always experimenting with new techniques and new technologies to give the best educational experience. So yeah, again, like a bootcamp was the start for us. Will it be the same thing 5 years from now? I don't know. Well, we're always in like discovery mode, reinventing our programs and.
So one of the big differentiators between CodeCore and other boot camps throughout the world that I've seen, and one of the motivating factors as well for me when I was looking at them, was going into a boot camp, you often think, will I actually get that much out of 8 weeks? You know, what guarantees do I have? And one of the things that CodeCore had was free retakes if you need it. Not that many people tend to retake, but that was always there in case it was needed. And that kind of felt like a safety net, you know. How does the change to 12 weeks and the possible new programs, how does that affect this policy?
Our policy is still there because we believe, I mean, if we accepted you into our program, mm-hmm. if you're willing to put what it takes to succeed in the program, we will help you. We mm-hmm. will go the extra mile if this means you retake, if this means we give you extra classes, if this means you come back and ask us for questions, whatever that means, we will help our students to get to where they want to get. To us, as I mentioned earlier, the key ingredient is that you have to love coding and you have to be willing to put in the effort to learn it. To me, that's if you have these two, eventually you will succeed. I mean, some people like, I remember this vividly from Paolo, one of our graduates, who was a cook, right? He said, like, I may not be as smart as those engineers who are my colleagues or something, but they can never outwork me, right? I will work as hard as I need to until I get there. He never had to retake, and he ended up working at Brewhouse, one of the best tech shops in town.
He was a pretty strong graduate, I remember.
Yeah, but he came from, like, a completely non-technical background. But I've never seen somebody work as hard as he did. He was coming early every day, as soon as we opened, and leaving when we close. And sometimes at the old CodeCore location, we used to actually
close pretty late,
like 1 or 2 p.m. Yeah. And it used to be late. You remember that, right?
I do, yeah. Remember sleeping there once.
Oh, really? CodeCore, the sleepover camp.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about CodeCore as a school, but at the end of the day as well, it's also a business. So how do you balance being a teacher, an instructor, and actually running the business of CodeCore?
Well, I mean, I'm fortunate to have a fantastic business partner. Her name is Bronwyn, and she basically helps me lead this company together. Without her, many of these things would not have been possible. Her help is certainly pivotal. And at 4 p.m. I finish teaching, and I usually just go and do some of the business stuff. And I've taught this boot camp enough times that I almost know it like the back of my hand right now. So I don't need to do as much prep as I did before. So I only look for like new things that came up with Rails and JavaScript, and I add those. Yeah. So usually they're like relatively not as many, as big in quantity, like maybe a few days in every boot camp. But it adds up over time. Like the boot camp right now would be very different from the boot camp that you took, Drew. It's almost like a complete change, right? Because every boot camp we upgrade it, we modify it, we add to it, and so on. So yeah, this is how we do it. And we are adding more teachers. It just happened that we had a fantastic teacher, Mitch. He couldn't continue with us anymore. So, but we're adding more teachers, especially with a 12-week format. And hopefully this will be
as well as TAs.
We have so many TAs as well. Yeah, I forgot to mention. Yeah, like at 4 p.m. when I finish teaching, there's actually we have a group of fantastic TAs. We usually have a mix of senior developers in town, very well-known senior developers, and our top students, like Drew, for example, who's been one of our key TAs, actually. Drew's reviews now is a well-known thing, where he does a review session every day or so, and then on weekends, and students just love them.
That's great. Maybe we could cover how you're sort of going to grow the school over the next little year, because there's a lot of competition, right? How is CodeCore sort of different than these other schools, and how are they going to grow in that way?
Yeah, I mean, there are other schools, as you may be aware. I just think that CodeCore, we have kind of our own personality, our own way of teaching. That honestly, I think there's so much demand for technology, for tech people in Vancouver, that I think there is enough for everybody. So, for example, we teach up to 6 hours per day, while other boot camps, they only teach a lot fewer hours, right? So we have, like, so for example, that aspect of it. One thing is that, you know, we have now a longer program than most others. We're accredited. We have unlimited retakes. So these kind of things fit more into, you know, our personality, what CodeCore stands for, and what we're all about. And so honestly, I'm a little less concerned about what other boot camps are doing. And honestly, I rarely check even what their websites or Twitter feed. I don't even want to get distracted or anything like this. But what I can tell you, we focus a lot on how can we make this program better. What's the next steps for CodeCore? Like, we thought about, for example, doing, you know, like advanced courses, right? So our students now, like Drew, for example, who has been in the industry for about 2 years.
2 years.
Can he benefit from like advanced courses now instead of like him having to study some things himself, right? We've thought about like, okay, can we make a year-long diploma instead of a 12-month to replace a computer science degree altogether, right? Can we do online education? We've explored everything, right? And we're always like listening to what the market needs, you know, looking at different parts like business and of course technology and market size, and see how we can play our you know, our next step. And honestly, things like we make a decision in a matter of weeks or months. So like what I can tell you now will probably change 3 months down the road. What we know for sure is that we're making it a 12-week program. We're launching an iOS fundamentals course in March. So this is for 2016. But we may launch an iOS full-time, like in the summer, for example. Mm-hmm. We may launch other courses as well. So it's hard to tell.
The first time that I met you, mm-hmm. Tam, this was a couple of years ago. It was in November, I believe, and it was Computer Week. And you were doing a Rails Day Vancouver, and that was at the SFU campus downtown. And it was a free one-day introduction to Ruby, you did in the morning, and I think Adam Cooper did the afternoon session, which was the intro to Rails with testing and some other things. And that was fantastic. It was a really great day for the community. Anyone, you know, I think it said, you know, have an intermediate understanding of software and to come out and follow along. It was pretty intense. It was probably most of the stuff that's covered in the first week of a boot camp as far as, you know, intro to Ruby and intro to Rails goes. And it was like an 8-hour day, I believe. I won the book, by the way. It was Pooter, Practical Awesome. Object-Oriented Design in Ruby, which was great. Thank you. Do you have any plans for an upcoming Rails Day?
Yeah, I mean, you brought a really good point. Like, we've done Rails Day before Code Core a couple of times, mm-hmm. maybe 3 times, actually, through the Ruby meetup. We actually did it once after the bootcamp had started. We did it in 2014. Mm-hmm. We just had so much going on in 2015 mm-hmm. that we were moving to a new space. We had a lot of changes in the company. We, you know, there's a lot of things happening.
Right.
So, of course, I actually think we're probably going to do one maybe in the spring of 2016 or so. Yeah, because Rails Day has been fantastic for people who just want to get a taste of what it's like. Mm-hmm. Or for people who are in the industry already and they just, you know, instead of having to go read a book over a few weeks, just attend an intense one-day workshop to get, like, you know, go there heads first kind of thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think we will be doing one maybe in spring of 2016 because we've heard nothing but positive feedback about those events.
Sounds great. Keep us posted on that. And I guess just one last thing that I think is on a lot of people's minds, or was on my mind when I first started thinking about boot camps, is with all these boot camps all over the place, not just in Vancouver, but in other cities, not just in Canada, but in other mm-hmm. countries, is the tech industry going to get oversaturated with people who know how to develop?
That's an excellent question. And that's almost a question that every student ask us, right? Mm-hmm. Like now, for example, we had a maxed out cohort in October. We have a maxed out cohort in January. And people are knowing more about boot camps and so on. I mean, I think there may be saturation points where, like, okay, the supply is more than the demand at a given point of time. But if you think of like 5 years, 10 years from now, would you think that the technology is going to grow or it's going to shrink? I personally think it's just going to grow. More and more things are getting automated. More and more things are using technology. Think of even these days how much paperwork happens, like physical paper, and mm-hmm. how much of that can be moved to becoming like digitized, right? Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, over a long period, over like a few years at least, technology is only going to grow, which I think is going to mean that the bootcamps are just going to be actually like an important part of filling that tech gap. But again, we may have to reinvent ourselves because, I mean, for instance, like we teach Ruby and JavaScript, but those may hit a bottleneck in a few years, and we may have to move to like functional programming or something like more advanced things. But again, that's up to us as bootcamps to like to reinvent ourselves and improve our programs to fit the tech growth and the tech need. But honestly, I think over a long period of time, the tech need is only going to grow. And look at it. There's so many industries that are going down in Canada right now, but tech is certainly one that is growing and growing probably mm-hmm. faster than many others. So yes, it's a long answer, but in short, I think there may be some saturation points where students may have to wait a little longer to find a job. But over a long period of time, I think it will just grow.
I'm a little surprised with that, to be honest, because I kind of had the same concerns and I thought, well, I better jump in on the first boot camp because, you know, you never know if the second boot camp is going to get jobs. There's 20 people coming out here.
Yeah.
But honestly, even with 4 boot camps, if they have 20 or so as their max and they're producing, you know, let's say 40 students every month coming out looking for jobs, these are junior developers, what's going to happen to the job market? And I think you could have you could have more boot camps than Starbucks in this city, and you still would have a hard time finding that next developer for your company.
Because I think one of the other things too is that people leave, right? Mm-hmm. People come here to Vancouver to go to one of these many boot camps, and then they go home. So it's not like the local market is probably never going to get saturated the way that people think.
Yeah, and also, like, for example, somebody like Drew, who's more like an intermediate developer at this point, he left a spot for like a junior developer, right? So
that's
to
true.
Me, it's
yeah.
like as more programs grow, like the older graduates will progress into companies. And now, actually, once you have a few years of experience, you may even get into some of these companies who don't, like maybe like the Microsoft or, you know, the Amazon, where they're like mm-hmm. they're still a little bit picky about like only choosing people with computer science degrees.
I read a really interesting article yesterday. Actually, it was linked. I think it was actually in our Mogo internal Slack, but it was about salaries in startups versus traditional companies and things like that. And it actually said the opposite. Like Google, and this was from somebody who worked in a large industry, but places like Google or IBM or Amazon, because they're hiring 100 devs every month or what, they can't afford to be as picky. And you, people who get those jobs are often surprised. They're like, I didn't think I could really get this job, but I applied and whoa, I got in. Whereas a lot of the startups, places who are only hiring one lead dev, for example, or only hiring one of this over the next few months, will be a lot more picky. What
so
do you think about
they'll
that?
They'll go for that unicorn over the sort of the random person.
Or they're looking person. For it. Yeah. Sure.
That could be the case. I mean, it just in Vancouver, it hasn't been so as much. It mm-hmm. could be because we don't have like the same tech giants as in like San Francisco or some of these companies. Now, I mean, you're right about the fact that like a startup, they have to depend on one person because that one person is willing to, must basically be able to deliver a lot. That said, startups also are a lot more agile. So they are willing to do, well, let's check out boot camps. While it would take other companies a while before they wake up to the fact that, oh, there are actually boot camps out there and let's actually interview them, right? Because it could be like a hard rule in some of those bigger companies that, you know, it's when you get the resumes, they have a computer science degree, put them on this pile, they don't have a computer science degree. Let's not even look at the resume, right? Mm. But I think this mentality is changing in many of the bigger companies, at least in Vancouver, it's starting to. We're starting to see some of our bootcamp students going into bigger companies. So, and I think once they start to absorb those, it will, you know, even put more demand for our graduates.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you very much for being on Vancouver Tech Podcast.
I'm really happy that you guys are doing this. We're way overdue for such a good podcast. And, I've listened to a few before, and I'm looking forward for future podcasts from you guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome.
Thanks, Sam. Did you have anything you wanted to shout out to anyone? If you needed TAs or you need to, if students want to get in touch with you, where would they go for that stuff?
Yeah, of course. We're always looking for teachers. If you think you can teach any modern technology, please, contact us. tam@codecore.ca, tam@codecore.ca. Also, if you're a student thinking of a bootcamp, just drop by Codecore or email me, tam@codecore.ca. We'd love to talk to you and see if this could be a good fit for what you're looking for.
Are you also on the YVR Dev Slack channel?
Sometimes. Not as much as I should be, honestly, simply because I've there's so much to be doing at Codecore. I know I'm guilty of this, but I've been there before and I should be there more often.
Sure. Cool. Thanks a lot, Tam.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks for listening to another episode of
VancouverTechPodcast.ca. That's our site. You can actually email us, too, at show@VancouverTechPodcast.ca.
Or find us in the YVR Dev Slack. I'm at Drew.
I'm at James.
We're almost always online.
You can actually get an invite to YVR Dev Slack if you haven't got one already at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
See you there.
Bye.